Hello, this is Adam Klein, Global Graduate Director and faculty member at New Ventures West. Welcome to Episode 5 of Stepping In, a podcast where we delve into how integral coaching can address some of the most pressing issues we face as individuals, as communities, and stewards of our planet. Today, we are exploring philosophy and how it shapes our worldview and behavior as modern humans. I was joined by Creative Communications Director Joy Reichart and special guest Justin Wise. Justin is a senior faculty member at New Ventures West and founder of Third Space Coaching in London. He is a parent and lover of music and philosophy. We begin the conversation with a simple but intriguing question. What does philosophy have to do with the family?
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah. The story that's on my mind, Adam, is a story that Hubert Dreyfus tells. And he says, if you grow up in the US, most often, very early on, when a baby comes into the family and the parents are picking up a baby rattle, what's going on is that they're, in one way or another, trying to excite the baby into doing something, like smile or laugh. And then when the baby laughs, everyone else around laughs and smiles, and there's great delight. And very quickly, if you're a small baby in those cultures, you learn that this is what's going on, that the way to relate to other people and the way to relate to objects is to be engaged and animated and to delight other people. And then he draws this contrast with growing up in Japanese culture. And what he has to say about it is that in Japanese culture, the very same object is more often used as a way to soothe and to have the nervous system of the baby settle. And so, again, from very early on, way before there's any language, way before anyone has purposefully said or taught anything, the baby is already attuning itself to a whole different kind of relationship to the very same object. So it begins there, and then it goes off, of course, in all kinds of directions from there. But it's a beautiful example of a phenomena that are in the background that we can hardly see, like a whole relationship to the world and people, to the notion of who I am and who other people are. And then what's possible for us is already getting shaped the moment we arrive in the families that we arrive in, the moment we arrive in the culture that we arrive in, and we don't even know that it's happening. And the reason why philosophy isn't, it seems to me that philosophy is important is that philosophy is one way that we can start to get to see this. We can start to look at what's in the background of our day-to-day life that's always shaping us, but is completely transparent to us. We see through it. We don't even know that it's there. And without looking in that way, so much of life is incredibly mysterious.
Right.
Like really hard to work with.
Yeah, I think, so what you're saying has me think about the metaphor of the fish swimming in water. And what philosophy does is say, well, what is it to be a fish and what is the water that the fish is swimming in? And how can we make sense of all of that?
There's such a great, another story. So you probably know this, but in David Foster Wallace's book, he has this book called This Is Water, and it opens exactly with what you're talking about. And in the start of this book, the two fish swim past one another, and one says to the other, hey, how's the water? And the second fish replies, fine, and then swims on a little bit and then asks, yeah, but what's water?
Right.
Like, never heard of that before.
Right.
So I think it's incredibly important that we find we have language and ways of looking at what can't be, because the thing that we're talking about can't be measured or identified in any of the ways that, like, you can't point a microscope at it and you can't sense it with gravitational wave detectors and you can't. It's a phenomenon that's unique, that's kind of particular to human life. This the water that we swim in, the background that we're in, that can't be pinned down by the methods of science, for example.
How would you define philosophy?
Well, I think what's so interesting to me about your question is how many different answers there are.
Right.
So this is, you talked about my Jewish background. This is the great Jewish move here, is to go, of course, there's not one answer. There's like 20, and let's hold them all in parallel with one another and not try to collapse them down. But what I find really interesting is it's the discipline that can ask questions that can't easily be answered by any of the other disciplines. Right. So something that's big enough that it can include, for example, I talked about science, can include science, but can also include mythology and narrative and the unique experience that we each have. And like, it's big enough to ask questions about all of those, and any of the individual disciplines are usually not big enough to do that. So my, you know, the problem with science is not that science isn't wonderful. It's that it only addresses one part of the world or one way of looking at the world, and then leaves a whole load out, and philosophy can ask something bigger. And I think it really matters for that.
But what's coming up for you, Joy, about this? What does philosophy have to do with your family?
my snarky answer is my personal family, absolutely nothing. Grew up in a, you know, blue collar working class, you know, I was the first one to go to college type situation, which in itself, you know, I'm sure is a whole, you know, can be broken down philosophically. But what's coming up for me is the phenomenon that I'm finding in myself and clients in the world where we grow up in this, you know, I think somebody named family system, and how very often the communities we find ourselves in when we grow up, our work, our, you know, practice groups are, unless we're asking these questions of how did my family influence my worldview, those groups kind of take on the same meaning for us. So we find our father in those groups, and we find our mother, and we play out a lot of the same patterns that are in there from a young age that stays with us unless we inquire into them.
So interesting hearing you bring this up, because I think it's absolutely relevant to what we're talking about. And the part of it that it's got me thinking about, Joy, is that we're not so separate from the world around us, which is the predominant view in our culture that comes from René Descartes' philosophy. As far as he's concerned, there's no grounds to think we're part of the world at all. And so all that leaves him with is that we must be completely isolated minds and that we can't reach anybody else. And that just seems so not the case. I see how his method is very powerful and why it was necessary. It did something really important, and we need it actually for all kinds of reasons. But it's a very narrow, impoverished view of what it is to be a human being. And some of the other philosophers whose work I've grown to love, like primarily Martin Heidegger and people who came after him, take such a radically different view, which is that there's really no separation between us and the world. I think they would say, and it's really helpful, no, we're just, what's going on is we're always being shaped by the world in which we live, deeply, deeply affected. And our whole kind of relationship with the world is formed by all the relationships we've been in and all the things we've done and the kind of bodies that we have. So, like, no wonder, having grown up in one family in a time which really formed our sense of the world in very, very deep and broad ways, and then we find ourselves in a different situation and our family systems that we were in are showing up here, not because they're kind of locked away inside, but somehow it's like, this is the kind of person I came to be by being in the family I grew up in. Like, we're always soaking in it as well at the same time as we shape it. So it seems such a narrow way to think, well, I'm this kind of walled off something that was never really deeply affected by anything.
The other thing that occurred to me listening to you two talk was what we're doing right now is a little bit of philosophy. And I think this is part of what has it be important for family, is how we make sense of just what we're doing in our life. And how do we want to be in our life so that we feel more satisfied or find more meaning or whatever is important to us. Starting to get into the work of philosophy and how we understand ourselves, our friends, what we're up to in the world, all of that.
It's when I hear you talk about meaning, and I think about the difference between how, it's hard to do this without generalizing, right? But how psychology might make sense of meaning and how philosophy might make sense of meaning. Mm. So there's a way of looking at meaning, it's like, something we can study, we can look at how meaning arises in the activity of the neurons in people's brains, we can ask all of those kind of questions, but that's not the same as asking the question, what is it to be somebody who experiences their life as meaningful in one way or another? What is it to be someone who cares about things? And that's not the same thing as what's going on in my brain, which is kind of an interesting question, but it's looking from a whole different place that's much more relevant to the actual living of life. And when you were saying it, and I also got thinking about this question about family that we started off with, which is that even it's so interesting to start to wonder about how the various things that I take to be meaningful, like being in the conversation with the two of you, how this is for me, how much is that shaped by the family that I grew up in and the culture that I grew up in? If I'd been born 200 years ago in the same place, or last year, halfway across the world, well, would I have the same categories of concern, same things that matter to me or not? And that's a really interesting and important question, because it starts to raise the possibility that there might be other things that I could care about than the ones that I care about now. And that would open up a whole new way of orienting to life, to find out that there are other things that are worth caring about than the things that I might get obsessive about or frightened about or clingy about or fearful about.
So let's,
I wonder if that's,
I was just going to say, if we could, to take a second to see how philosophical thinkers have affected this conversation, even to draw what we're talking about with some distinction in terms of like how this, how these types of thoughts and how thinkers of philosophy can have profound impacts. So we've, and we could just use the two that we've already named, I think, Descartes and Heidegger, and talking about Descartes' thought and how that influenced the Western world. And then what have people done in response to that?
As I've been studying Descartes, what I've got really interested in is Descartes seems, he seems so convinced that we're completely separate from one another, that we are not, there's just no, there's actually no connection between people at all. And it comes from his sense that we're just minds and nothing else can be trusted. Everything's to be doubted. And although it sounds to me like a, it can sound like a very esoteric philosophical question, actually it's not. It's influenced us massively, because if I can't be sure that you're a person at all, and all I can tell is my own world, I've got very, very little reason to be interested in how radically different your world could be from mine. Mostly, as far as I can get, is other people are, if they're anything at all, then maybe they're kind of copies of me, or they see the world the same way. So it takes away the idea that this very idea that we started talking about, that there's already a sort of human world existing into which we get born. This starting assumption that other people are exactly like me almost certainly comes out of the Cartesian tradition. My guess is that we learn to be this way because we're so steeped in this in our culture. And when I first started doing, before I discovered integral coaching, and I was making my way, doing the best I could, doing sort of organizational consulting and things, I came across this fantastic model that I knew was wrong, but I couldn't tell at the time why it was wrong. And it was a model of communication, and it had two heads, and it had thought in the first person's head gets translated into words, which then go across space, and they go into the ears of the second person, and then into the brain of the second person. And you know that communication has happened when the thought that was in person A ends up in the mind of person B. And then there were all kinds of clever things in the model to show things can get in the way, like the person wasn't listening, or, and I looked at that and I thought, this is wrong. There's something wrong here. And what's wrong with it is it doesn't take into account that the person A and person B can have super different worlds in which they exist, and that the relationship between them is the relationship between whole worlds. It's not the relationship between two minds that are exactly alike, and we're kind of computer downloading data from one mind to another. But it was taken for granted as this is the way people are. Like it was in a standard, you know, management textbook or something. And it seems to be such a misunderstanding, at least the way I see it.
Right. And I also can't help but have noticed that you described the model as two heads, just heads, brains, nothing below that, nothing around them.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the things I had in mind about the distinctions or the and impacts of the Cartesian the philosophical way of thought of, you know, I think, therefore I am. So what if he had said, I feel, therefore I am? What world would we live in now?
Yeah, I also think, Adam, you could go even further than that. You could say, I am because I am. So I'm saying that quite deliberately, because the other, and picking up, Joy, on what you said about just heads. So, of course, we're so much more than just heads. And my first thought when you said that was, well, of course, there's body. But now I'm thinking about it, it goes way, way, way beyond that. Because who I am is deeply, deeply, and this is Heidegger's point, is deeply, deeply enmeshed in the world, in everything. And Descartes has a really hard time with that. And to give him some due, he was doing it for good reasons, because the time that he was writing and living and thinking was filled with confusion and superstition and everything muddled up, this with that. And somebody needed to find some way to straighten all of this out. And he did it. But the price that we paid was that he said, don't trust yourself. And so I am because I feel, like there's truth in what, some kind of truth in what I'm feeling, or meaning in what I'm feeling was taken away from us. Or I am because my body is this way, or my body has anything to do with the world. If I look at so much of the suffering that I see in the world, not the kind of suffering that comes from, you know, all the economic troubles that we have and not having equal distribution resources, all of those kind of things, I'm talking about the kind of suffering that just comes from our engagement, our day-to-day engagement with the modern world of work and living, is that so often the world is presented to us as if the only part that's interesting is our minds, and everything else is to be left out. And we get incredibly convinced by this, and it hurts us terribly to live that way.
Yeah.
And one of the things that philosophy can do is it can remind us of what we lost, what we've left behind. Thinking about that, I have three children, and they go to a school that is wonderful and is also born of the wider education system in which we live. It can't help but be in lots of ways. And it's so, it's kind of sobering and fascinating at the same time to see how we allow 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds to play and jump and laugh and cry and hold things and build things and to engage themselves with their full bodies. Like, we think that's fine, but and then we gradually strip it away. Let's have you sit down and not move around too much, and then let's stop asking you how you feel about things or whether things matter to you. So many of us are being taught this again and again and again all the way through their lives. Leave stuff out, leave stuff out, leave stuff out. One of the things that happens for me a lot I do quite a lot of work in organizations, is this might be a very English phrase, but so often when what I'm wanting to do is bring up these questions about what feels meaningful here, what matters, what do we care about, there are a couple of very stock responses. One which I imagine is said everywhere, which is something along the lines of, well, that's not business to take all of that into account, the body, the heart, or that's very touchy-feely. You have that phrase in the US as well.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Which basically means get out. You've transcended. You've stepped over the boundary of what's considered to be true and real here. And philosophy has been so helpful for me in this, because it gives some grounding for saying, no, look at what you just did. You just left out a whole part of human life that lots of people have huge amounts to say about that really matters.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's where philosophy also comes in and is helpful is in appreciating the whole. In these situations, Justin, it's, well, show me the part of you that is business. Is it just this finger? Just this finger? Or where is it? Can you point to it? No, because we're...
And that's where...
We're complete. We're whole. Yeah, we're complete. We're whole. Yeah. And wherever we go, there we are. You know, we can't leave things out.
Yeah. And that's... We got talking about different philosophers and their takes. Of course, René Descartes is the champion of dividing things into parts, and that method really helps for some things, but not for others. Mostly it doesn't help for human beings. And then there are other philosophers, and we've mentioned Martin Heidegger, but there are many, many, many others, and not just from the Western philosophical traditions, who say, fine, divide things into parts, but only when it's helpful. And never forget that all the parts are always an expression of a whole, like a whole person or a whole life or a whole community or a whole world or a whole universe, and that you do damage by pulling things into parts all the time. And philosophy is probably the only discipline that's big enough to keep on asking that question, to not get caught in the kind of obsession with reducing everything.
And like you said, the reduction or the separating into parts as its place. So it's really helpful in science and technology to break things down, understand all the parts and how we can work together, or change this part so this can happen, and really, really helpful there. But in what we've been talking about, when we get to people,
it's not as helpful. And then I'm even thinking about, as we've been talking about people and bringing the whole of the people, when we talk about families, there's also the whole of the family. So not that it's just individual parts, mom and dad and child one and child two, but then there's the whole, which is the whole of the family. And how is this unit operating? And how can we include the whole at a more, at a multi-person level, and what happens there? And so then there's, as you're pointing to, philosophers who deal with that. And is it even, are we even separate?
It's so, it's not only a question that I find endlessly moving and fascinating. It's also a very pragmatic question, because in the world of, like, if you take families, the move to split families into parts, to think about families in parts, means that you can end up making the mistake of, say, there's some difficulty of a family, and in a family is locating the difficulty in some person. Like, Adam, you're the difficulty, or Joy, you're the difficulty in this system. So let's straighten you out, because we found the part where the problem resides, which coaches can get into doing really easily as well. If you're not paying attention to the, this person is showing up in the world as an expression of, I think that's even better than saying part of, an expression of a bigger system in which they are. And it can kind of correct our tendency to think that everything lives in one place, and that there's an easy explanation. It can also help us be way more compassionate, I think.
So we have a few more minutes, and I want to turn the conversation a little bit. And how is it that philosophy informs integral coaching, and what impact does it have on New Ventures West and the methodology and all of that?
Adam, I think that philosophy is the ground for this method. Everything we've had to say about how philosophy can ask questions that are big enough to include all of human life, and philosophy can take care of our wholeness and take seriously that we're always a part of something bigger than ourselves, and can step outside the bounds of the reductionism, the reducing everything down to parts that we see so much in our culture. It turns out, because of all of that, that philosophy is an incredibly not only compassionate but pragmatic grounds to base a coaching methodology on, because it means that you can have a method that leaves nothing out. And that seems so important. Like, if I look at this with my own experience being coached or teaching this method, or working with clients, that we stay open and questioning and wondering, and not try to take a stand which would claim that it's ever possible to have a complete answer to anything, that leads us ever deeper into questions that might reveal, disclose more of the world for us. It also, Adam, it strikes me, one of the branches of philosophy that I've been studying a lot that's really central to our method for a while is phenomenology. And phenomenology, it seems to me, is super interested in the appearance of things, how things show up in the world. Like, how does love show up in the world, or how does care show up in the world, or how does hate show up in the world, or suffering show up in the world, which is a different question from what is it. It's much more like, from where is it arising, and then also getting really interested in what forms can it take. So I think is a really deeply philosophical question that's very important. Like, how many what forms for love can we find that we're not currently bringing into the world? What forms for care can we find, for compassion can we find, for aliveness can we find? These are also deep from within all these different philosophical traditions that you're talking about. These are the questions that people have also been grappling with for a long time, and they're very different from mere sort of utility. Will it be useful? Yeah, of course it'll be useful, but it'll be something else as well. It will be life-giving.
Right. Well, final comments from either of you as we bring this to a close?
Yeah, I can say, just as one who is more, I guess, body type, the feeling as it relates to both talking about coaching and doing the work of coaching in my own development is feeling these philosophical traditions as roots and something to rest in. Justin may have mentioned that this is really the ground for our work, and I wanted to add that I literally feel that as an energy holding me as I do this work. There's stability and there's also movement in it. It lets us keep moving because it's endlessly, it's an endless inquiry. that not just we're up to, but the world has been up to and continues to be up to. And so it's just huge, and it's a wonderfully comforting and reassuring container from which to do this work.
You've been listening to Stepping In, the podcast from New Ventures West. Thanks to Joy Reichart and Justin Wise for joining me today. We want to hear what you think. Email us at steppingin@newventureswest.com to share your thoughts. And please share this podcast with your friends on social media. Until next time, I'm Adam Klein. Take care.